From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment.
Shake it, don't break it.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's always a pleasure to watch somebody perform whose pleasure in performing radiates from what they do, be it somebody like Lady Gaga or Duke Ellington, Louis Armstrong, or my guest, the man sitting across from me, Giancarlo Esposito, whose pleasure as an actor always comes through in the roles. We know him recently from his work in dystopian stuff such as Revolution or the Maze Runner films. He's also in the newest Maze Runner film, The Death Cure. But 30 years ago this year, he exploded on the screen with a little movie called School Days. Giancarlo, thanks for being here.
Pleasure to be here with you.
I gotta say that I've always been struck by that thing in you, though, that I can see your pleasure in acting come through when you're working.
Well, I'm so happy about that because I always remind myself, at least especially lately, how much I still love it. I've become a director in the last 5 years, but my preference is always to act, and there's something inside of me that wants to raise the level of consciousness of people, telling a story, bringing them from one place to another, and having them arrive there not knowing how they got there, but knowing that they witnessed something that happened, something beautiful, something tragic, something expressive, something desirous. To me, that's what it's about.
Also, too, I've so often noticed in the new characters you play, you're talking about directing, it's 10 years ago of Gospel Hill, your directorial debut, and how watchful you tend to be as a character. Your characters tend to be pretty wary people, don't they?
They do. I find that over the years of being an actor, my attention has always been on myself. And when I did a show called Breaking Bad, it taught me to put my attention on others. I made that my lesson.
Funny, because I think back to seeing you in King of New York or even your small role in Cotton Club, and even then I'm aware of how your characters are watching what's going on around you.
I try to be present. I think that's not only part of me, but has grown into part of my acting lesson, to be really present and observant of people. I also feel like in many ways I'm hyper-vigilant because I do know what's going on around me. Could be that I was a cadet at Mount St. Joseph Military Academy. Could be that I came from a mother and father who had a tumultuous relationship and I was always watching to see what they might do to each other and hoping that they wouldn't harm each other. It could be that I always wanted to be a military man. And military men, you know, if you're thinking about your loved one when you're in the middle of a battle, you might not live through that battle to see your loved one again. All your focus has to be in one place. And I believe we're in a society now where we multitask and we do many different things that we feel like we've been gifted to do. But I think that when we do that, we're not giving one thing all of our energy. And so when we stare into our phones and have a conversation with someone next to us, we're not really giving them our complete attentive presence.
It's funny because I guess that's the word I would really use in describing basically every one of your performances. I was thinking back to Gospel Hill, which I watched again last night, and just how he sort of takes pleasure in his status in that community, but he's watching everybody. I mean, he's kind of a silent chess master in that piece, isn't he?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, he wants what he wants. He wants to be successful. That is his goal. In order to do that, he has to see people's weaknesses. He has to see what they need. He has to placate people. He has to tell untruths. And he has to come out, in the end, being able to live with himself. And, of course, that was his problem. He really, in the end, couldn't live with himself, having done what he did. Gospel Hill is a very reminiscent story of many golf courses that have come up in different cities that have taken over the African-American community and pushed them out to service not only a game, but commerce. And that was a statement I wanted to make with that movie.
I'm aware, too, of your character's relationships to the world. And I'm just thinking, for example, the opening of Death Cure, you get to do something I'm sure you want to do as a kid, which is to open a movie with a big action sequence.
That's
I mean,
right.
Talk about seeing your pleasure. I mean, you're grinning like a movie star in this because you are a movie star. But your ownership of that car and that opening chase scene is something I feel like you went your entire career to do.
Oh, absolutely. You know, to be a space cowboy in a dystopian world, someone who can own that. And, you know, I went down there and they put me through my pace. Can you drive this thing? I said, can I drive this thing. And they, you know, no one believed me. I said, go back to my previous movies, Harley Davidson Marble Man. I, you know, drive a pickup and I spin that thing around and put it on its side. And they said, show us. They put some cones up. And we have one shot where you have to come down this hill at 65 miles an hour, stop on a dime, and not go past this cone because that will be the camera. Man, I took that car out, spun it around, jacked it up on all sides, went over hills, came back down, flew right at these guys, and they didn't flinch. They were had their iPhones, and they were shooting me, and I stopped that car on a dime right before those cones, and they were like, whoa, where'd you learn to do that? I said, I've been acting 50 years. I've been driving, doing my own stunts. But I had so much fun as Jorge because, you know, this is what the movies are. You know, you get a chance to really do and be human beings that you might not be able to be in your real life. And that's where you get a chance to really express yourself in a wide open. We were shot that opening sequence in South Africa, and it was bumpy and tumbly and everything else. And I just had so much fun. Now, albeit I was a little more careful with an actress in the car next to me than all on my own, but I certainly was having fun, and that's what we should be doing.
Again, this gets back to the way I started the show, the pleasure you radiate as a performer. I mean, just that glint in your eye and that smile and just your sheer, again, ownership of that piece of material just made you've been waiting your whole life to do something like that.
I really have. You know, I grew up on the movies, and the movies affected me very deeply. You know, when I met Sidney Poitier 3 years ago at the Emmys, and I just really hesitated to go up to him because I know how it is to be approached all the time. And I finally, you know, got enough courage to, and I knew what I wanted to say to him, to stop him before he left. And I told him, you taught me dignity. You taught me how to respect myself no matter what color I am. You taught me to love the words, the way he spoke. You taught me how to pursue literature, to be able to understand what those words that were coming out of your mouth, how I should own them for myself. So I grew up in a world where I saw that I could be a complete human being just because I was in this skin, not because of my color, but that I had to be the best for me, not for anyone else. And I was able to tell him that, tears in my eyes, and he stopped
me. I can see the look in your eye now.
And he gave me a hug. This man changed my life. And the movies in general have had that effect on me. They have allowed me to remove myself from growing up poor, from being from a divorced family, for having self-esteem issues, for thinking I'm not good enough, for not asking for what I want in life. The movies changed that for me. They allowed me to be whole. And certainly, I've always wanted to play, you know, a cowboy, this space cowboy. I'm getting ready to do a project on Bass Reeves, and I cannot wait, because we're going to get a green light, to tell the story of the first African-American U.S. Marshal in history. And we've told his story before, but we never knew it was Bass's story. Now he will get his due when we make this story. But I love riding horses. Revolution, I ride a horse. You know what I mean? I had Flash, and who really, we got to know each other, and this horse would do whatever I wanted it to do. I mean, you can live out many lifetimes in movies, but you can also have the opportunity to express much of what humanity is missing today. And we're missing connection. Yes, do I have a fun time in the opening of The Death Cure? I do, but this movie's about family. It's about not leaving a man behind. It's about caring for our world and our environment.
Which was Revolution, too, in this way.
Absolutely. And it's an important topic to tackle for us to understand. We want to avoid being in a situation of a revolution. We want to avoid being in a situation of a death cure. We want to be able to, and what I love about The Death Cure is these are all young people with consciousness, who don't necessarily want revenge. Death Cure is the third film in a series. There were 6 novels by James Dashner. But these young people want to have a safe haven. What does that mean to be safe? What does that mean to be in a world that's unsafe? So it's allowing us to see what the possibility of our world could be if we don't take it back for ourselves. And I think that message is more pertinent and more timely than it could ever be with what's going on in our United States today.
By the way, you're not listening to a promo for the Winter Olympics, although you may recognize the voice. My guest is Giancarlo Esposito, who does that, by the way, in addition to a number of other things. He's also starring in Maze Runner, The Death Cure. Did I catch you off guard with that?
You did, because the reason I did that and the reason they call me is because I'm a skier. And I love the Winter Olympics. And, you know, they heard of my passion for this. And boy, it's a meditation to do those ads. I love them. You know, the music swells. And these are people who are just like, well, no, they're not just like you and I. These are working class people who work 4 years to get back there. They work in factories, all different kinds of places. Their dreams come true. And that's what gets me about the Olympics. You know, when you can be in control of your physicality to get you to a place to compete and have your dream come true, this is what it's all about.
But that love of it, I mean, when did it connect with you that acting was this thing that you loved so much? Because again, I think about someone like Jason Robards. Every time they stepped out and I had a chance to see you on stage, I mean, it's just, you also take this pleasure in the company of actors, which is why for me, Gospel Hill was so important. But it's also so important seeing you in Cotton Club and seeing you in School Days, seeing you being around actors. And part of that watchfulness is just also you watching other actors at work.
Absolutely. I feel like we never lose or can pass up the opportunity to learn. And this is about life. I still, you know why I love acting? I learn about all these different kinds of people. You know, when I play a lawyer, a cop, whatever character it may be, I dive in to learn what their lives are, to learn how they do their craft. Sherry Baby, probation officer. I hung out with a probation officer for over a month. And these are guys who carry guns, but guys who aren't police, guys who really do care about people more than police because they don't want to arrest you and put you away. They want you to stay clean. And I learned that mentality of human beings. This, to me, is an education of a lifetime. And for me, acting has provided the opportunity to learn about the common man, to learn about the uncommon man, and to really execute those things that I've learned and put them through a prism of you take the best, leave the rest, and make it personal. And that's where you see that twinkle in my eye, because I feel like the gift that was given to me was to make the right choice in my vocation and my artistry.
I think, though, one of the things that we're talking about here, and it comes across when you're in a community, is when you're with a group of people, there is also pleasure your characters take. I mean, so they're often you're talking about Gus from Breaking Bad, and that pleasure you took was being able to read people all the time. But we can go back to Julian in School Days.
His brother Almighty.
And he's reading people all the time, too. And in some ways, there's not that big a difference between the two. And they're often playing people against their best instincts and seeing what it is they want and getting that and using that from them. I mean, but these are guys who have a relationship with the communities in which they live, don't they?
That's right. They do. And much of what we talk about in acting and what we try to secure for ourselves is not to forget about the world. You know, as I become more mature, an actor, I remember that we are a microcosm for the whole world, and we represent our communities, all the communities that we come from. So to not forget about humanity as a whole is very, very important, because people who see my work and really understand it, they can see the emanation of all that I am and all that I've come from. And it's important because it is, I loved playing this character in a film I directed called The Show, a very unflinching look at reality television, very difficult movie to watch, but it's something that was foreboding in terms of telling about our future. But what I loved about playing the character that I played in that, Mason Washington, was that he wasn't as smart as I am. He was a working class dude. He ate Wonder Bread. He's trying to feed his family and could not make ends meet. And he wasn't a guy who was willing to do, he did in the film start to figure out maybe he could do something that was not against the law to make money, but he wasn't that kind of person. So I wanted to experience that everyman feeling. And every man brings his whole life with him, because just by the way he walks, he's carrying the weight of the world on his shoulders, especially today. There are many people today who can't feed their families. There are many people who, within their communities, step out of their doors and are afraid of law enforcement. There are many people who've lost sons and daughters at the hands of law enforcement because of their paranoia that the pencil they took out of their school bag was a gun. So we're living in a very, very strange and very, very dangerous world. And if I can help people to feel more comfortable and more aware of not only the communities where they come from and how to start to fix those communities, but also of the world, then I'm doing my job.
There's so much to talk about and a lot more. My guest, you know the voice, especially in the last couple of weeks, is Giancarlo Esposito. His new film, of course, is The Maze Runner, The Death Cure. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're on the clock for Giancarlo Esposito, who's going to rush to a plane as soon as he finishes, so I can't thank him enough for doing this. We were talking, though, earlier in the show about the movies, and I know that you sort of took it on yourself to make sure that the films of Oscar Michaud were taken care of, didn't you?
Yes. You know, I love Oscar's film quite a bit, but I believe, and I don't want to clear up the confusion, I've known about Oscar for a long time, but the films that I found were the Ted Totty collection. Ted Totty was a cutter for Columbia. And Lawrence Fishburne and I were working on a film, School Days, in Atlanta, Georgia, and I met a guy named David McCord. And David was a white Southern boy who had a black bookstore, and I was fascinated by him. And he said to me, you know, I know this guy who has these Ted Totty collection of films. And these films are included Mantan Moreland and many other African-American actresses, Nina Mae McKinney. It goes on and on and on. And I said, I want to meet with him. And I met with him, and he had these films on film. And Lawrence and I started to figure out how to put our dollars together and buy these films. And we did. And Lucky Ghost was one of the movies that Mantan made that was really fantastic. There were a few Westerns in there.
Westerns are incredible.
Yes.
Because they're made for no money.
No money. And they're made in 9 days. You know, unbelievable amount of time.
Westerns with music in them. I mean, the movies are basically these sort of genre crashes of film. You could tell part of the thing was he wanted to get in everything he could because he never knew if he would get to make another movie or not.
That's right. And we had Singing Cowboys and everything. We got these movies. We put them in storage. The storage started costing a lot of money. Lawrence said, "Hey, I want out." I said, "No, we have to preserve these films." And finally, I took the films, had them in storage for 7 years, and I got them to the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, and I donated them. Because I also, before I did that, I transferred two of the movies to videotape, thinking we're going to get rich, baby, because we got to put these movies in the video store. I mean, you know what I mean? We're both poor actors, right? And I we had a couple of really great transfers, and all that happened, and nothing was going on. And I said, these must be preserved. This is our African-American history. I said, give up your ego, give up the idea that you're going to have a commercial success with this, and give them over. And they're now over at the Academy under the Espo Fish collection, because at that time, Fishburne, we used to call them Fish. So
Some of us still do.
And so they're there, and they're actually cleaning up two of them so they can be, you know, of course, shown again one day. But now I know that they're safe, and they're there alongside the films of Jim Jarmusch and the films of Martin Scorsese as well.
Well, where they deserve to be, because they are as important a more important part of our heritage than anything else. Because I saw some of those films, they were turned up in weird places because nobody knew where the copyrights were.
That's
so
right.
If you had a copy, you just played it like you owned it. And they would turn up in the oddest places, like on late night TV. And I'd see them and just transfixed by them in the same way I'm guessing you were.
Gun Mall was the film with Nina Mae McKinney and Robert, oh gosh, and I went to school with his son, Matinee Idol. Come on, you know who I mean. Handsome. If I could be that handsome, man.
Really? If you could be that handsome, have you seen yourself lately?
Oh, well, thank you so much. But, you know, I'm really happy I got over myself and got those donated. And I also still have the scripts, and I'm working on a restaurant. So now you've given me great impetus to go back and look at those scripts as we write our second episode of our Bass Reeves stuff, just to see what they were doing then and how it compares to what we're doing now.
It's a treatment. My guess was somehow I thought you could make money off black and white Westerns with black people. It's Giancarlo Esposito. His newest project is The Maze Runner, The Death Cure. But again, I want to go back to this thing of you talked about presence, but I think you find a way to invest basically every character you play with an eye always on what's going on outside of himself. I mean, and part of me wonders, is that some way of you making these characters like you, and that they don't want to look at themselves. They don't look at other people. They want to put that gaze on other people.
It's interesting. You know, when I finish a film now, when I used to finish a film 20 years ago, I'd come home and say what you said to me. Have you seen yourself recently? Look how beautiful you are, all this stuff. And I've come into my own. And when I finish something, I cover the mirrors. I don't really want to look at myself. Maybe it's because I've just created a character that I want to, you know, divest in, you know, get rid of and move on to the next. Yes, I think the outer eye that you recognize that of someone who is observant and always sort of representative of a human being who sees everything is the outer eye that represents looking inside. You know, to me, if we're able to look inside and see who we really are, then we never lie. We tell the truth because we know the truth of who we are, whether it be good, bad, or indifferent. And I grew up as a people pleaser person and never wanted anyone to think anything bad about me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because, you know, I'm an actor and I want it all to be good and gushing and lovely.
But you play so many characters who aren't those people.
That's exactly right. It's odd, isn't it? And I've since given that up. I've since had I had a conversation with my youngest daughter, who's 14 and a prolific filmmaker, won the Austin Youth Film Festival 3 years in a row. She just turned 14. And she's so concerned about what everyone thinks about her. I said, well, you have to let that go. You have to let that go in order to be original. Because otherwise you become a follower. You do things that, you know, that please people as opposed to pleasing yourself and your own master. And that own master inside of you is your divinity. And so for me, that outer eye that you see is also the inner eye that unlocks that divine presence in me that knows that I'm a channel, that knows that everything I've ever done has brought me to this moment. Everything I've ever done brought me to Death Cure. To be able to have fun and have that glint in my eye and really enjoy myself and not be nervous where the camera is and be totally natural, everything has brought me to that moment of understanding and knowing that my talent is there and that the exercise of information that has to go through me to understand who the character is and all that's going on around me is there. I have a really good, as I call them, building blocks, really good foundation. Now, as my mother used to tell me when I was singing on Broadway, we'd do thousands of vocal exercises and all kinds of things going on. And she would say to me, now just forget it all and go and have fun. And you know what? It's happening for me now more than ever. Because I'm mature enough now to go, wait a minute, enjoy life. Because I'm committed. I'm a committed human being. I'm committed to my artistry. But that doesn't always have to be so intensely difficult or hard. It can also be incredibly fun. It can also, I can also enjoy it. And I've always wanted to be always present for myself. And in that presence that I hold for myself, I wanted that to be reflected onto the roles that I do so that I'm completely aware. Film is interesting, man. There's a lot going on the set. There's a lot of people. There's cameras. There's all these things that you aren't supposed to see, and they're right in front of your face. So it's important to find the balance of your outward look to your inward knowing and not let anything distract you.
But you're talking about finding a way to take two things that are kind of at cross purposes, which are having an awareness of what's going on around you, but also focusing and channeling all this concentration so you can do the thing that matters to you. I mean, it's just two different things, isn't
it? That's right. When I played this character of Gustavo Fring, I found a way of looking at someone, but in the reflection of their eyes, I see myself. And so Gustavo is that dropped. He's that relaxed. He has no fear. In a way, it's almost very clinical.
But he also wants to be taken seriously.
Oh, I mean, absolutely.
That's, to me, the real danger in him. And we see that whenever somebody doesn't take him seriously. Tell me where that came from, because that's very you. I mean, that in some of these characters you play, that moment where somebody isn't looking at them the way they want to be beheld.
Yeah, like Malcolm X picking up that doll. You know, when I flipped that switch from that smile to that menacing look, I heard Spike scream behind the camera. That's when it kind of started that I realized, ooh, you have this quality. You can nail somebody with that look. You can stop them in their tracks. Had a girlfriend once who saw a piece of that particular movie and said, oh my God, I think I saw that look from you at one point or another when we were going out. And I said, I'm sure you probably did. So it's inside me. I'm fierce. I'm a fierce warrior. That's where it comes from. You know, even before this lifetime, I realized, even before military school, even before I have this real sense of the mythical journey that my soul has taken. And I know this hypervigilance, this quote-unquote badass guy inside there is a warrior. He's a warrior who fought many battles, and it's chasing me because I know I can turn. When I had my first child in Amsterdam, walking down the street, my wife is Irish. On the other side of the street comes this man. He is Rastafari dread. And you figured, you know, yeah, he looks cool. He was screaming out of his head, and he was speaking in Dutch, and I knew what he was saying. And I took this baby, who was basically 2 years old, and I said, Mama, you go with Tom Hoffman, great actor from Holland, and you go that way. And this brother kept squeaking and talking, and he was looking right at me. And as he started to step off the curb on the other side of the street, I stepped into the middle of the street. I said, you come, bring it. In English, right? And I knew what he was saying. He was criticizing me for having a white wife and carrying a mixed baby and all this. And I realized, whoa. I said, maybe you got to back down, Giancarlo. But that's that same fierceness of protection for your child and your family. That's that same warrior who would sacrifice himself before any other. I realized that's part of my DNA. So now I practice being polite even when I'm tired, because somebody, everyone knows me in airports everywhere. And that's what, you know, I learned from my spiritual practices, from my mother's advice. You know, that's the test. When you're really exhausted, to be nice and to be cordial, that's the real test of who you really are and what you're really made of. Do you know yourself? I know myself. Don't piss me off, brother, because you're done.
Well, fortunately, I'm not getting that look right now from my guest, Giancarlo Esposito. It's The Treatment. He's done so many things. Again, 30 years of school days this year. But I guess I just find myself thinking, too, you're talking about your mom. I know your mom was an artist.
She was.
And part of this, to you, it seems to be proving that the artistry that she wanted to make for herself, you could keep that tradition going, or that idea alive for her.
You know, you could say that. I honor my mother quite a bit. She was a lovely human being and had great artistry. She was never realized. She stopped many years before she ever had the opportunity to become what I think she wanted. She gave up. I always knew that she wanted from me something more and something better. I carried the torch for her, of course. But I carried the torch for all of those young actors and young people and human beings who really don't know if they can ever make the right choice about their whole life, about what they choose. I'm an example of having made the right choice and made the choice that allows me to flourish. And so my work is terribly important to me because that representation of all that I think I've learned and all that I have become in my growth. And if I can use that to be loving, to be fierce, to be understanding, to be compassionate, then I've become a better human being.
Plenty more to talk about. You got to come back and do the show again, because I guess you got to go catch a plane.
I do, and I'd love to come back, Elvis. It's really, really great to speak to someone who's also at the top of their game, but so intelligent and so very sensitive as you are, and I appreciate being here.
My guest was clearly in a hurry by saying such nice things as Giancarlo Esposito. His newest film as an actor is Maze Runner, The Death Cure. Recording engineer here at NPR West is Peter Stensel. The show is mixed by Kat Yours, edited by Blake Veit, who's associate producer. I'm terrified of this man. It's The Treatment. To catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.